Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU, the mighty 101.5 FM. I am Jim Samaria.
And I'm your co-host, Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you music, backstories, opinions, and interviews covering all genres of rock music from the 1950s to the present.
And Mark and I are authors of the book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday, Today. Our book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to the present day with words by my co-host, a man who once believed that the police were a trio of reggae-loving law enforcement officers from Chicago, right?
You're a funny guy, Jim. See, that's why you need to keep your day
job. Funny how I'm here to amuse you.
What are we doing? Yeah. What are we doing? Pesci imitations
doing Joe
now?
Pesci, yeah.
All right.
Well, Mark, can you believe this is our third week in a row where one of our guests is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? He is one of the top drummers of all times. And just very, very thrilled to have him on the show. Can you tell us some more?
Yeah, and I think the opening music probably gave it away. Many know Stuart Copeland as the founding member and drummer for the Police, but Stuart is also an author, a documentarian, a composer of movie soundtracks, video games, and I believe operas, and a multiple Grammy-winning recording artist. And his most recent project is teaching orchestras how to rock.
And in his spare time, I don't know what he does in his
spare time. He's an underachiever.
Yeah. And speaking of orchestras, Stuart is bringing his Police to Range for Orchestra show to the Genesee Theater in Waukegan, Illinois on May 19th. Once again, the Genesee Theater in Waukegan on May 19th. And despite his busy schedule, he's here with us today. So please give it up for the multi-talented Stuart Copeland. Welcome, Stuart.
Well, thank you for having me on there.
Well, glad to have you. My gosh. So let's begin with your latest world tour, where you and your band are backed by an orchestra playing rearranged Police songs. Your most recent gig was in London, and you are soon headed to the Genesee Theater in Waukegan. So which orchestra will you be playing with at the Genesee show?
Well, I'll be playing with your very own Waukegan. The mighty Waukegan. And it is a great thing to pull into American cities, well, any cities around the world, you know, the Atlanta Symphony or the Chicago or, the, you know, or Waukegan. And I'll meet those guys in the afternoon. We'll rehearse for 2.5 hours. Those guys with their flinty eyes will read that chart down, and we will open the doors at 7:30 and rock the house. Because you can do that with the orcs. You can't do that with a rock band. Rock bands take like 6 weeks to rehearse a show. But with the orchestra, you put the chart down in front of them, count them in, and they will.
They're all business. Well, I've been thinking about this long and hard. And so how does this all start? Do you just kind of pick up the phone and say, hello, I'm Stuart Copeland. You remember me from the Police. Would your orchestra like to rock and play Police songs? What is the range of reactions you've gotten? And has any orchestra said thanks but no thanks?
Actually, I don't pick up the phone. I'm sorry to be exposing the seamy underside of show business here, but there are these people called agents. They pick up the phone. And so the formula isn't really that, you know, like others look at me and I put on this big show with a lot of people on the stage and a lot of production. And wow, how do you afford that? Well, I don't. I don't hire the orchestra. They hire me, which is a much better arrangement. And because these guys can read, you know, they'll whatever you put on, you splatter ink on the page and they'll play those dots, whatever. Because they can do that, that means I can come into Waukegan, sit down with the orchestra and play a great show without all that stuff. And I can do it. I feel sort of like Chuck Berry sometimes, pulling into a town. In his case, he would hire the high school band. But in my case, the big orchestra hires me.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's a good analogy with Chuck Berry. You know, a good story is listen to Bruce Springsteen's story of how he had to back Chuck Berry once and how difficult it was.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, because he doesn't rehearse or anything. He said, y'all know Maybelline, right? 2, 3, 4.
Exactly, right. It's exactly what Springsteen said. Well, obviously you're going to do a lot of Police songs. What songs did you not put in there because you just thought they might be too difficult for an orchestra?
There were none that were too difficult for an orchestra, but I do have to limit it because I only have that 2.5 hours. And so I can't improvise. I can say, hey, let's play this other song. Let me show you how it goes. No, I've got to use every minute of all those musicians on the stage. And so the one that I didn't get to, but I regret, and I am going to get to one of these days, is Bring On the Night. But apart from that, we got Your Message in a Bottle. We got your Every Breath You Take. Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic. All the big ones. And some obscure ones, too, by the way, that turn out to be kind of my favorites, like Tea in the Sahara. I never thought of that as one of the foremost Police songs, but it's actually got a lot of depth in there.
Well, that's kind of interesting, because I did read in one of your prior interviews where you had said that Message in a Bottle was just too good in its original form and was too difficult to cut into pieces. So somewhere along the line, you must have had a change of heart about, you had indicated you had arranged it for orchestra, but you felt that the original form was just too good.
Well, let me make a distinction there between the form and the arrangement, or the orchestration.
Okay.
You know, in music world, I mean, your audience couldn't care less, but arrangement is somewhere between the form, which is the shape of the song, verse followed by a chorus, followed by a double chorus, and then the bridge, you know, what the sequence of events of a song, that's the form. And the orchestration is what instrument is playing what. Arrangement is somewhere in the middle, where combining those two things, when you rearrange a song, a Burt Bacharach song or something, or a Sting song, and you kind of change and smush it around. Well, that's what the derangements are, is I did change and smush things around. But in the case of Message in a Bottle, the form is so perfect because it tells a linear story. You need the first verse. You can't drop out a verse.
Got it. You got to
tell the whole story or it doesn't make any sense. So the form is locked, and I couldn't mess with that too much. But I did take enormous liberties with the orchestration. So, I mean, that arpeggiated guitar figure that everyone knows, well, that's with the orchestra doing all that now.
So people attending these concerts will possibly hear Message in a Bottle.
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
it'll take them a minute to figure out. I do play to Hide the Head.
Okay.
Hide the Head.
And so it isn't immediately obvious when we crank up a song which song it is.
Well,
but you got all your favorite parts of the song.
Unfortunately, we don't have a version of Police Deranged for Orchestra doing Message in a Bottle, but we do have the Police version. So let's, from the band's 1979 Grammy-winning studio album, Regatta de Blanc. I love the titles for the Police album, by the way. They're too, you should have named those albums like Chicago. It'd be easier. 1, 2, 3, 4. But
they all came from our manager.
Oh, okay.
Well, the first three came from our manager until, like, the fourth album. Sting said, hang on a minute. I'm writing these songs here. I get to name the album.
All right.
And so he did.
Well, anyways, here's the album Regatta de Blanc, and I think I pronounced correctly. Here's the hit song Message in a Bottle.
Message in a bottle. Oh, message in a bottle. an SOS to the world. I'll send an SOS to the world. I hope that someone gets mine. Message in a bottle.
Great song, Love Message in a Bottle. Well, let's talk about the Police a little bit. Is it true that after the Police unofficially disbanded around 1986, you stopped playing drums for a while? Is that true?
Yeah, not by choice, but just I got another job doing film scores, and I just never got around to it. And it kind of 10 years went by, and I hadn't played them at all until I'd hit them occasionally, but actually the drum booth, you know, the room where I had the record, it was just a great place to store and hang wires where I could see them all over the cymbal stands and everything. But eventually, Les Claypool of Primus called up and lectured me, told me it was my civic duty to be banging. And he talked me back into it and playing with this crazy guitarist that he knew called Trey Anastasio. He formed a band called Oysterhead.
Right.
And I rediscovered the joy.
Well, we're going to ask you, actually, we're going to have a question. We're going to ask you about Oysterhead and even Animal Logic. And, you know, I'm not sure what the zoological names are about, but maybe you can tell us later. Well, looking back at your time in the Police, I've read that you indicated that anxiety and fear were some of the driving factors in your playing. So do you feel these emotions are common among young musicians who suddenly find themselves part of something far bigger than they imagined?
No relation between the anxiety and the playing. The anxiety was about all times offstage, life.
Oh, all right.
Life was anxious. It's kind of a social vertigo. One's words have too much impact. You can't just walk into a room and fold into the crowd. You got to be the man. And it puts you up on this pedestal, but it's annoying being up on there a lot of the time. You know, it's like you're driving around this huge outsized avatar, bumping into things, and it's a different set of rules. I'm not complaining. It's okay. One lives, one survives all the attention, but there is such a thing as too much attention, believe it or not. But as far as playing, that's the antidote. That's when it's all fine, is when you're actually playing and making the music with your buddies.
You're listening to That Classic Rock Show on WHRU Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM. Okay, Stuart, if we don't play some more Police songs, our listeners will storm the station with torches and pitchforks. They think they're on their way right now. So here is one of my favorites off the band's third album, Zenyatta Mandata. Let's listen to Driven to Tears.
Can you say that you're not responsible? What does it have to do with me? What is my reaction? What should it be? Confronted by this latest atrocity. Magazine, too many cameras and not enough food. This is what we've seen. Driven to tears. Driven to tears.
All right, Stuart, I want to ask you about your 2006 film, Everyone Stares. You used a Super 8 film camera, and you captured the band's rocket ship ride from 1977 through 1984. It's the ultimate fly-on-the-wall documentary, and after plowing through 50 hours of footage, did you come away thinking it was worse than you remember, or perhaps maybe not as bad?
It actually is more cheerful than I remember, I guess because I pulled out the camera during the cheerful moments. If I was having a screaming match with somebody, probably wouldn't be reaching for the movie camera at that moment. Hmm. Although I did get some grump in there. But the reality was that we got along just fine 98% of the time. No, maybe, okay, 92%. okay, maybe 87% of the time.
Margin of error.
We got along just fine as long as we weren't playing music. It was the music that drove each other nuts. You know, poor old Stingo's trying to sing his song, and he's got World War III going on over his left shoulder. I'm having a great time being World War III, and I got the singer looking back at me. He's got some problem. You know, he's got some words he wants to sing. I don't know. All I can see is the back of his head. I got stuff to do. And so we drove each other nuts musically. But as soon as we were like driving along or doing dinner, we got along great.
I wonder if that's like Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker.
Yeah, maybe.
Personally, they had big issues, but they loved each other's playing. So.
Well, you had a lot of bands, you know.
Yeah.
We were the opposite.
Well, let's get to another one of your police-related projects. It's a new book titled The Police Diaries, 1976 to 1979. And the way I see it, you were the band's sort of unofficial archivist. You kept diaries, receipts, documents, et cetera, for the early years. So at that time when you were doing all of this, what was your motivation? Did you think, hey, this might be worth something down the line, or I might want to show my grandchildren, or what? What was that about?
Well, in those starving years, I wasn't the unofficial documentarian. I was the manager.
Oh,
and I
okay.
booked all those trucks. I booked all those gigs. I collected all that money. I ran everything and kept the books. And the thing was that I kept them. And I also had the diaries where I talked about, I included the information of how many people attended, what we got paid. I gave us a rating system of how we played. And I just, it doesn't take up much room. I just threw them into a shoebox. And years later, still have them. And they tell an interesting story about the struggle years, which was that we stuck together through thick and thin. That amazes me that we really did, considering the conflicts we had later. We went through a lot of paying dues to get where we got. For a year and a half to 2 years, we were starving. And we were starving during that time. The other big revelation was we did not yet have Roxanne. We didn't have No Message in a Bottle. We didn't have any of those big songs that you all are familiar with. We just had Mike bass lines with yelling, which I came up with on a utilitarian basis. We had to have punk material to play in the punk clubs because that was the only scene that was happening at the time. So we had to pretend to be a punk band.
Right.
That,
you called
the critics saw through us pretty quickly.
Called it your fake punk band, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing that is a miracle is that we stuck together just through... I was talking, this is the opposite of what I was saying a minute ago. Just that bass player is the guy for me. He lights me up my rhythm. And we had a bond as a rhythm section before we even had any material to play. It was later on when Sting did start to write material, when Andy joined, that opened up the musical and harmonic possibilities for Sting to start writing some serious songs. That's when we had the conflict, because having conceived of a song, he is a musician after all, would conceive of the whole thing, how the drums and bass and guitar all work together. He's allowed to do that, but that doesn't make it very fun for me. So the conflict was about not what songs to play, but how we should play them. And that didn't come along till later. The early years, the starving year, when we were starving and codependent, we got along much better musically.
Well, it seems like the chemistry was awesome between you, Sting, and Andy Summers, because it really comes to play in your live shows and in your songs. And I want to play a song off your 1981 album, Ghosts in the Machine. It's my favorite Police song. It's one of those songs that, you know, when you're driving in the car, you just put up the volume as hard as you can and start singing, doing the karaoke carpool stuff. And that is Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic.
Enjoyed part one of that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU 101.5 FM. We are talking with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Stuart Copeland.